another edition of I Can't Believe I Only Got 3 Hours of Sleep, otherwise known as the Cybersecurity Matters podcast. I am your co-host, Dominic Vogel. Joining me as always, and I'm sure he's also sleep deprived as I am, Christian Redshaw. How are you doing today, my sleep deprived brother?
I'll tell you what, you hit the nail on the head, and I don't know if it's bags under my eyes that you're seeing there, but I had a wonderful and unexplained awake patch between 1 and 4 this morning. So that's always fun when you're doing podcasts the next day, to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. But otherwise, in the big picture, I'm doing great.
That's good. I knew it was a relatable topic, sleep deprivation for both of us. But other than that, what we do have in common is we're going to be talking with someone really cool today. Who are we going to be chatting with today?
Well, representing BDC is none other than Ted Olak. And so he helps organizations with financing. And so we're going to get into some criteria that he would have for financing businesses and basically being a growth partner.
Awesome. Well, let's pause here. We're going to bring Ted in and just stay tuned for a couple minutes here. And we'll bring Ted in for an awesome conversation.
Ted, welcome to Cybersecurity Matters. Awesome to have you on.
Thanks, Christian.
Ted, just for the benefit of our listeners and viewers, love if you can maybe just share a brief, I guess, bio of yourself, what your career has been like and what's brought you to this point. Just so we have a little bit of context of who you are and why you're so awesome.
Thanks. Really, I've been in finance for about 20 years, 20 plus years, and started off in day trading and then went into investor relations, investment banking, commercial financing, and then into M&A financing as well. And prior to that, in a different life, I was an operations supervisor as well during my university days, and even worked at Burger King. That was my first job. And so I understand about flipping burgers and eating them as well. But in regards to finance, I really wanted to help businesses grow. And whatever I could do to be involved on the business side of it all to get them to achieve their targets and goals is something that I really feel passionate about and have felt passionate about over many years. So just seeing the success of businesses. I do LinkedIn videos, and I saw that you and I, Dominic, are connecting on the videos, and it just worked out well because you're in cybersecurity or are in cybersecurity. For myself, I'm in finance, and I see just that really good integration there. That it's really important for businesses to make sure that side from the cybersecurity side is managed correctly, make sure that threat assessment is assessed, as well as because we deal with a lot of M&A transactions, and that's something that we typically don't look at. So it's very, you know, it's a benefit that we're sitting here and having this conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask one quick question on it before I know Christian wants to jump in here, but one quick question. Other than I'm probably going to have to nickname you Whopper now from now on, knowing that you work at Burger King, but that's a side note. But you mentioned there about M&A activity. I'm curious about why that, I guess, the current mindset. This is something that happens in many M&A instances, that cybersecurity or cyber risk is overlooked. Why do you think that is? Is that because the mindset is that that's, you know, more of a technical issue and not seen as a risk issue? I'm just curious to your thoughts why that, again, isn't really common practice yet for that to be involved in the M&A side of things.
For sure, because it's never, people are risk managers, credit committees, business developers from our side. When you look at a transaction, you're looking at it from a standpoint of, does it generate revenues? Do they have any client concentration issues? More of an operations type of issues that you look at, then you look at management, but you typically haven't had the time to spend to look at their threat assessment from a cybersecurity perspective. It's not in the lexicon, essentially, at the moment. And that's essentially why I like that you and I connected, because it helps bring the lexicon in for me as well. So when I look at an M&A transaction, then, hey, we should put this top of mind, because we are moving way more close, or living in a virtual world, and we're moving more and more into that space. That data security and integrity is very important.
Very well now, said.
Ted, you work for an organization called BDC. For those that don't know what BDC is, can you tell us about the company that you're with?
Yeah, so it's the Business Development Bank of Canada. It's a crown corporation of the federal government. So we have one shareholder, which is the federal government. And we are tasked to go out and help support businesses and get them to achieve their goals. Help the, I mean, when you help businesses, then you're helping the economy and help creating jobs out there. So it's been around since roughly around 1945 in a different iteration. And through the years, it has become the Business Development Bank. And really, it's about helping entrepreneurs, small to medium size, even large businesses as well now because of COVID, but supporting businesses from a perspective of finance, capital, advisory, smarts, and to get them to achieve their goals. Because as an economy, we need to create jobs. We are a trading nation. So we need to do whatever we can to get entrepreneurs to think outside of Canada's box, not just relying on the United States, but thinking global as well. There's a stat out there that mid-sized companies, and that's the area I typically focus in on, mid-sized companies are 1.4% of them only graduate to become large companies. And they only represent 2% of the GDP as well. Mm-hmm. So, or sorry, two, not 2% of the GDP, 2% of all businesses out there. And they don't graduate to become large organization. Large organizations are 500 plus employees. Mid-sized companies are somewhere between 100 to just under 500 employees. And they don't graduate to become larger. And to do that, you need to have the foundation, the skill set, the management, and essentially what we're talking about here today to ensure that these businesses can become global players in larger organizations.
So you're dealing with entrepreneurs, and I believe you're quoted as saying something like, in order to finance entrepreneurs, you have to think like an entrepreneur. And I'm just curious, from your perspective, what is top of mind for entrepreneurs? What is the current entrepreneurial mindset that you encounter?
Well, at the current moment, because of COVID, it's really about cash management right now. Are my clients going to pay me? Can I support my employees? It's good that the federal government came out with some good subsidies to support these businesses, because businesses are able to survive because of that. Or they would have had to curtail their employment, their employee job force. And so from the perspective right now, it's about how do I deal with the current issues of COVID, but I'm right-sizing my ship right now. And once I've right-sized it during COVID, how do I take advantage of this leaner operation that's punching above its weight class right now so that I can take advantage of opportunities post-COVID? Because so that's where a lot of the entrepreneurs are thinking right now. There are industries, it's not for every industry, because some industries have been impacted more than others, tourism, hospitality, to name a few, right? Where there's other industries like in the tech space, some manufacturing distribution businesses that have come back, regained. Tech never skipped a beat primarily or generally, but there's been industries that have been impacted. So they're more worried about just surviving. But a vast amount of the entrepreneurs are thinking, what do I do after COVID? How do I take advantage of that? And that's looking at opportunities of moving into different geographical regions, or even looking at doing some acquisitions of businesses so that you can hit the ground running, or even improving their operations from an operational standpoint.
There's an interesting component there I want to just talk about for a bit there. So I mean, you mentioned there how, especially during a time like COVID, again, you know, some sectors were hit harder than others, but you know, there's that survival mindset that so many smaller businesses are on right now, and they don't want to invest in marketing or growth. And you know, there's a school of thought, or two schools of thought, people who say, oh, just hunker down and survive and then wait for the sunnier days. And there's others who say, no, this crisis is a term of opportunity as well. It's counterintuitive, but we should be investing in marketing and, you know, making better product or innovation or what have you. What's your thought on both those schools of thought in terms of, again, sometimes there's different contextual factors that go into that, but should more organizations be using this as an opportunity to be better prepared for 2021 or 2022 when those sunny days come out, rather than just waiting for that sunny day? Just curious to your thoughts.
So for me, I'm a pro-growth type of person. So that's my perspective. The businesses that have been hit really badly, like again, the hotel industry or tourism, they're thinking about survival, right? Even restaurant businesses, they're thinking about survival today. But you got to look at, there are going to be sunnier days, as you put it, and I agree with that, and they're coming. So how do you position yourself to grasp that opportunity? And I say that businesses should be investing in the here and now. Let's see, okay, we understand that the current issue, the current situation, you have to worry about the survival, to make sure the lights are on and the employees are well taken care of. You're on top of all your payables and things of that nature. But the thing is you want to take advantage, because there are businesses that aren't, they're being reactionary. So those are the businesses that potentially won't be able to get that full opportunity or grasp that full opportunity, and they'll sputter. And the ones that will sputter will be set behind. The ones that have put the time and effort right now, even over the last 6 months, to say, okay, when COVID does subside and we get to a sense of some normalcy in life, then we should be doing a acquisition or opening up different locations. Those are the people that are the businesses that are going to succeed, far greater than the ones that are going to be, oh, we just got out of this, now let's put a plan in place. Now they're 6 months or 3 months behind, where these guys are ready, hit the ground running. That's the opportunity.
I love your passion and your orientation towards business growth. It's actually our motto as well, from a more of a risk management side of securing business growth. So it's a core value and initiative for us too. So it's awesome to hear you say that. Now let's switch gears for a moment from the macroeconomic issues to more of a micro issue. When you're looking as a lender at a potential client and you're evaluating what you're going to loan to them, how much, and all the different factors in, talk about the risk factors that you are thinking about and considering and analyzing when you're looking at a company.
Yeah, thank you for that question. So when we look at a transaction, I'm lucky in my position, where our organization within the BDC and the broad spectrum of all financial in the financial industries, because we have a lot of tools and we can look at transactions very differently than a number of organizations out there. So when the key areas that I focus in on are the management, the history of cash flows, what is their forecast of their, what are their forecasts looking like? How long the employees have been there? Is there any client concentration issues that we have to worry about, supplier concentration issues? And then looking at what type of operational procedures they have. The ones that I really like and I'm more passionate about are the ones that are really management that is coachable, that's willing to listen to you. Because when the ones that are willing to listen, they'll take your input, your advice, and take that knowledge and say, okay, we're gonna look at how do we grow this business, how do we rectify any issues, and go from there. But the key issues, back to what you're asking, is the history of cash flow management, their experiences, their past successes, and looking at the employee workforce and client concentration is really the key areas.
Very close parallel to what you were saying about evaluating an M&A transaction. Very similar criteria, it sounds like.
For sure.
Yeah. Dominic, I'm going to give you the last question here.
one of the things which I'm really curious on is, do you find that business owners and entrepreneurs that they're unaware of BDC? Like, is there an awareness problem in terms of being able to tap in for entrepreneurs and business to tap into this? What questions should businesses, and especially for our small business viewers that are, or listeners that are tuning in, what's the best way for them to either A, get in contact with you, or to even start going through this process? Or are there certain prerequisites they need to think about as well?
For sure. So we'll look at businesses. We have a whole wide range of what type of businesses we look at. Early stage startup type of businesses, all the way cradle to grave type of businesses, right to even to the end, where we can do help with post merger integration as well. But what my biggest suggestion is BDC.ca is a key place to go to, because we'll help earlier startup businesses with financings up to 150,000 online, right? And so those are the key, those are the businesses. So maybe like sub-$1 million aren't aware of where BDC could potentially help them. We can help them from equipment, working capital, purchasing real estate. And we, as a government, look at it differently. We provide working, so we essentially want businesses to have working capital, because that's the lifeblood of businesses. So we'll do high ratio real estate lending, where there isn't very many lenders that will do that. Schedule I banks, RBC, TD, Scotia, will only do up to like, say, 65, possibly 70% loan to value. You still got to pull out 30% from somewhere, either from the business or equity, to buy this building for your operations. Well, we'll do up to 90 to 100% financing for these. So the business, it's like paying rent. You're going to pay rent to yourself then, essentially, right? And you create a equity in this building that you can leverage later on to help grow your business as well. But, and then we'll look at M&A type of transactions. So really, back to your question, the businesses that are below $1 million, they're not aware, because they rely upon their accountant or their lawyer to really help. Those are their key advisors to help them. And it's essentially upon them to say, direct them where to go. And they're wearing all different hats as well too. But they focus in their lane, which is accounting and on the legal standpoint. So sometimes they are not aware. So we try to do a big marketing push. There's a lot of commercials. We're on the radio as well, just to let clients know that we are there to support entrepreneurs, small, medium, and large businesses, so that they can come to us if they have any questions. We have one shareholder, so it's a little bit different. We're there to help the Canadian economy. We consider ourselves development bankers. So we don't have an ulterior motive, and I don't want to say other bankers do from other organizations, but we're essentially there to support businesses, even on the good times and the bad times. So that's the big difference between us and a financial institution like a RBC, TD, Scotia, where they may not be as supportive because they have to listen to their stakeholders and their shareholders. And where we have one, which is the government, that is really pumping whatever support that they can do to keep these businesses afloat. But essentially, at the end of the day, we are.
Yeah. I love that line of through the good times and bad. You know, that speaks volumes, Ted. And this has been an absolutely brilliant conversation. Chris and I are very, very appreciative of you carving time out of your day to chat with us today. That was absolutely brilliant. Thank you so
great
much.
Great note to end on, Ted. Thank you so much.
That was a really, really interesting conversation with Ted, you know, and I certainly felt too short, because I think there's still a lot of good things that we could have talked about with him. But as always, curious to know your thoughts or key takeaways from that conversation with him.
Yeah, for sure. Well, growth is a passion of yours. I know it's a passion of mine as well. And I just love the fact that he is there to help organizations grow. And I just saw his push to get that small percentage of organizations that are mid-size into the bigger size and increase that number. Another observation that I had that I didn't expect was their criteria for funding, for financing, was very similar to an M&A acquisition target criteria of looking at the operations and any client issues and looking at the leadership and the risk the way that they do. It just seemed like almost the identical list between those two categories. So something to take note of there.
Absolutely. You know, and that was really interesting that he mentioned again, the need to see greater cyber risk due diligence in M&A yes. activity. I think, you know, coming from someone of his pedigree to be able to say that, I think that was really interesting to hear that. So hopefully the tides of change are in place there to see that when it comes to M&A activity.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that more in the next episode that we have Ted on. Looking forward to diving into more cybersecurity specific topics there.
Absolutely. You know, we've come to the point of the show is, as always, where we like to give a special shout out to our amazingly loyal fans and listeners and viewers. Thank you, as always, for taking time out of your busy day and busy schedule to spend just a few minutes with Christian and I and our guest this week, Ted Olak. If you want to check out previous episodes, please be sure to check out the Conversations That Matter YouTube page, as well as a slew of other awesome podcasts that fly under that family banner. But until next time, be well, be safe, mask up, and we'll be sure to see you on the next edition of the Cybersecurity Matters podcast.